Succession number 23147, Wheel 5.
Norman Doar, Reel 5. I mean, displaced persons were another thing that was... they were all over Europe, weren't they? Did you see many of them on your travels during the wartime?
No, didn't see any, really.
Right.
No.
So you were up with the front more,
yeah,
weren't you? Yeah. What about after VE Day in Germany? I mean, were there many displaced persons about there?
Well, no, I don't think... Well, we didn't sort of live a life that to mix with those sort of people. We were in the barracks in Germany, in Berlin, and we were, didn't see many in Tostedt other than these neighbours that I saw. Beyond,
yes,
that...
Yeah. Well, what did you think of the medical treatment available to the military in Europe? I mean, I know you weren't wounded, but, you know, a lot of people were.
One thing I wasn't impressed with was the dental treatment. Everybody that I know that went to the dentist didn't get a very good deal with the dentist.
Why was that? What did he do?
Well, I don't know. My mate across here, he had treatment, and it was in the Hampshires, and he had treatment and subsequently had to go to the hospital and have a bit of bone taken out of his jaw. And two others that I know have had similar. Perhaps it was just a coincidence that I knew them, three of them, but
yeah,
they all had bad treatment with,
right,
dentists. But other than that, medical treatment was very good, I thought.
Were you conscious at the time that if you got injured, you'd be well taken?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Our medical people were very, very good.
Confidence in that, yeah.
This chap Fred, actually, I told you about, he was a stretcher bearer that got the MM, and they were very, very efficient.
Yes, yeah. So tell me about the demob process. You've got your notice of demob when you were in Berlin. Where was did the actual demob take place?
Okay.
Did you come back to the UK, or?
I don't remember. I'm afraid my age is creeping up on me as regards that. This meant demob book. I expect that would tell us where I was demobbed. I don't know.
Oh, right.
Would you like
a little look, yeah,
have a butcher's at that?
Okay. So, unit overseas or UK stamp. I can't. It's something about the Dorset Regiment. I can't actually read where it says. Oh, Berlin. Here we are. That's right. Your testimonial. I think you were demobbed in Berlin, and you did a painting and decorating course, did you?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, that was to prepare you for civilian life, was it?
Not really, it was to get out of doing other duties.
Really?
We all tried to find a course that we would get on that we'd enjoy, that take us out of guard duties or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, right. Oh, it might have been Aldershot that you were actually, 2nd of May. Oh, no, you weren't demobbed on the 2nd of May.
No, we came back via a transit camp in France somewhere, and I know that two blokes went out the night that we were there, and they were found dead in their beds the next morning. What they'd drunk, nobody seemed to know. But
really? In this transit camp?
Yeah, in the transit camp. I forget where
they died of drink,
I think. Yeah, possibly something that they drank, they thought, yeah.
Oh.
I suppose
it's a bit worrying.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Were you out for a drink that night?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So what did you think about your actual demob? I mean, they gave you a suit, did they?
Oh, yeah, I had a suit that I wouldn't be seen dead in it now. But I had a suit that I had to wear for every occasion, of course, because I had nothing else to wear.
Yeah. What was the actual demob day like? You know, was it, you know, they... It was quite sort of clinical, was it? I mean, no one there to say goodbye to you.
Oh, no tears and hugs or anything like that.
and you had a gratuity, did you?
Yeah, so much, I forget, four payments I had there, so I don't know how much it was.
Yeah.
War gratuity, yeah, four payments at pool.
All right. What did you do with yours?
Oh, goodness me, I don't know.
Do you think you've got any physical effects left from the war, or good or bad?
Well, hearing's suffered a bit. On occasion, we had these 5.5 guns quite close behind us, and when they went off, you know, your eardrums sort of baffled in and out a time or two. Mm. And most of the blokes that were with me have had ear trouble ever since. I've got a hearing aid that I got because of it, you know. Mm. Mm.
So do you get a pension because of that?
No, I don't, no. But some of them do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right. Any other physical effects, good or bad?
No. I broke a finger, that little finger once,
uh-huh.
Diving into a trench. But I never had any medical treatment, and it sort of cured itself. It's still a little bit deformed.
Bent, yeah. You didn't consider going and getting medical treatment for that?
No, I didn't. Yeah. That was, I believe that was Hill 112. Yeah.
So what, I mean, you could have gone back and got treatment for that.
I suppose so, yeah.
But it didn't cross your mind?
No.
What, you'd rather stay with your mate?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, it wasn't serious enough, was it, you know, but painful, I suppose, at the time. But
What did you do you miss from army life? What did you miss from army life when you left?
Well, I don't know, the mates, I suppose. I met some jolly nice mates, and especially the car platoon. We were only a group of less than 40, I suppose. There were 10 carriers, with three on each, and four on some, and couple of dispatch riders, DRs, and two trucks and two mechanics. So we were a pretty confined group, you know. Everybody was so good mated with one another, and everybody knew everything about everybody, you know, and we really did get on well together. Mm. And I suppose I miss those very much, you know.
And I suppose that was an experience of learning to live with people and...
Oh yeah,
get on with them.
That day and night is, you know,
yeah, all the time.
All the time,
which was a benefit later in your life.
Oh, absolutely, it? Yeah. Mm. I've kept in touch with quite a few, and I've looked a few up. That the trouble was, I don't know where I'm fated with them. But one special mate, a bloke named Topsy Stock. Well, he called him Topsy because he came from Topsham near Exeter, and I was on a caravan holiday down in Devon, so we went to looked up Topsy in the telephone book and went to visit him, and he was a smashing guy. So they came to our caravan and had tea, and we went out for a few drinks in the evening, and he was going to come up and have my caravan and go up in the New Forest for a holiday. And then about a month later, his son rang up. He said, "I'm sorry to tell you, but Dad dropped dead in the garden yesterday while he was gardening." So that was the end of poor old Topsy.
Yeah.
And then I went to look for Ken Mead. He was a Bren Gun car driver in my platoon, in my section, in B section, because there was three drivers. Bill went from London, and Ken Mead and me. And Ken was a dance fan, lovely bloke, and his parents had moved to South Africa. So I went down to, he lived on the edge of Devon and Cornwall. So I went down to the village to try and find Ken, and to find that he died about a year before.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a bit fated, you know.
The way it goes, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. When you got news about the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs, what did you think?
I don't know, really.
At the time.
I'm glad that finished off the Japanese War, I suppose. Mm. I think the Japanese are cruel, vilest people that could be, and I don't suppose I've got any sympathy for whatever happened to them.
So you went on the reserve, I imagine, did you, when you came?
I don't know whether I did or not, I don't think so.
Oh, not that, you may not have done.
No.
Not that you remember, right. Did you consider joining the TA at all?
No.
You keep your hand in. Why was that? Because you'd had a good time in the army, you know, but you didn't want to keep any ties to it.
Well, I've kept my ties. I was standard bearer for the regiment, for the association. I did that for 22 years until I had a couple of heart attacks. So.
Right.
I only gave it up a couple of years ago. I still got the
right.
The plaque that they gave me in celebration of my 22 years service.
But when you first came back, you didn't consider joining the TA?
I didn't join it for some while because I was going in the police force, and that was my life then, you know.
Right. So do you think your army experience helped you in becoming a policeman?
Oh, undoubtedly, absolutely.
In what way? What particular
Well,
thing?
The discipline that I suffered in the, not suffered, but I'd had in the army, obviously stood me in good stead in the police force. You know, when you get told to do something and you do it without question or thought, and that's what did stand me in good stead in the police service, undoubtedly.
Were there a lot of other ex-servicemen in the police then?
Well, I think quite a few, but I during my police service, I went into the training department, and if a bloke came in and said he had army service, you immediately thought, well, this is a guy we're going to have, come what may, because of the discipline. You know, the discipline is the main thing, I think, in life.
And that would always be obvious, would it, with the non-military, ex-military chap, would always be that much different?
Absolutely, yeah, without doubt.
When you say discipline, does that include sort of reliability?
I think it goes together, I think, reliability and discipline, yeah. My grandson, he finished his army service. He did 3 years and went to Ireland, got commendations and all that. He's just joining the Metropolitan even now, this month. And I feel sure that his army discipline will do him a great deal of good in the police service.
The two go together, don't
I
they?
I think
There's
so.
Something about the uniform existence, isn't it? And the discipline, as you say, So that's probably the best thing that the army taught you.
What, discipline? Oh, I think it is, yeah.
It benefits you the rest of your life.
Except for the comradeship, you know. I was offered promotion in the army, in the car platoon.
Really?
And none of our blokes wanted to stay drivers and didn't want to be a corporal, you know.
Really? You didn't want to be a corporal?
No, I didn't. I refused it.
You wouldn't have been a driver then?
Yeah, I'd rather be the driver. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. When you were in Europe, did you get letters regularly?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My wife used to send write to me quite regularly, you know.
And did you write back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if she ever kept them. I never thought to ask her.
Ah, she did. So, I mean, did the post always find you?
Yeah, pretty well always. Sometimes quite late, but, you know.
So did you, I mean, you mentioned having leave. From when you went into Normandy, did you get any UK leave?
Not until getting well on into the battle, when things were sort of sorting themselves out. I came home for the Christmas.
Did you? Mm. So what was that, Christmas 44?
Yes, right, yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like coming out from a battlefield?
Marvellous.
In the east of Britain?
Wonderful, yeah.
Really?
It was, yeah.
Did you feel they knew what you'd been through or what you were going through?
Well, I think they had a pretty good idea of what it was like, because, you know, you sort of mentioned things in letters, I suppose.
Right, yeah. Did you tell them what it was really like in letters?
Not really, no. I wouldn't want to scare my mother to death.
So that Christmas, I mean, things were fairly short, weren't they,
at home?
Yes,
I can't recall very much about what happened on that Christmas, but it's only a few days that I had, you know.
So what was it like going back? Because you can't really want to go back, you know.
Well, I don't know. I didn't hesitate to go. I had no thoughts about it.
Yeah.
Not wanting to go back, I don't think.
How did they make a big thing when you were in Europe about sort of health and sanitation and sort of cleanliness and...
Not generally, but we had one deputy to our colonel and second in command. What was his name? He was always a stickler for cleanliness and always talked about washing your undercarriage and all this business when you're. Because I remember that the village where the pig got injured, it got shrapneled. It was all, I got a photograph somewhere, all the buildings were aflame, in a flame. And I remember him standing at the side of the road with this bowl of hot water, stripping himself right off and having a good old rub down. He said, "Don't forget to wash your underclothes," and all this business. He was quite a comedian, really.
What did you think of him?
Great. Really? Yeah, marvellous.
You must have had a lot of laughs.
Oh, gosh, all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you survived so intact mentally. And
I think so, yeah. That's a good life. I remember getting into trouble once, and that was in Normandy in the early days. And when the D-Day tanks went so far until they ran out of petrol, then they stayed there as stationary guns until the ammo was all gone. And of course you see these tanks all over the place with the flaps open, and on one occasion this 0.5 Browning machine gun had been blown right off. This tank was lying beside it, and I got a passion for guns, and so I collected up this 0.5 Browning and some ammo and took it back with me to where we went. We were sort of curled up in an orchard, and I took it all to pieces and cleaned it all up, and I thought I'd like to try this out. So I tied it up into an apple tree, quite without any authority to do so, of course. And I remember a Jerry plane came over, and I got out and blasted away at this plane with this gun. It was our commanding there, chap who was in the, whose wife was a magistrate at Weymouth. He was in the brewery, and of course he'd give me a right old reprimand for blasting away, because as soon as the gun went off, everybody dived for cover, and they wondered what the hell was happening. You know, it's apparently would make quite a bit of a clatter, and I don't know whether I hit the plane, but I had a bit of fun with the gun.
Yeah. So yes, you got your laughs where you could, didn't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was a good crowd. I couldn't have asked for anybody better. I was always proud of the Fifth Dorsets, you know. I suppose I was lucky, because now most of them were territorials in Poole that were in the basics of the Fourth. It was a Fourth Dorsets territory unit in Poole, and when the war started, they split them in half and made them the basis of the Fourth and the Fifth.
Yeah.
Then they made up the numbers with the militia people.
So when you were training, were most of the people in the 5th Dorsets from Dorset?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Either Dorset, Birmingham or London.
Right. And how did you get on, you know? Marvellous. The London people.
Smashing London chaps.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill Went was a great mate. He was the driver of one of my carriers. And he used to come down to meet us at Poole, and he was a photographer in his spare time, and he took a lot of photographs, which I still got, of my family and son when he was a youngster.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose one of the things why you were so sort of at home in the 5th Dorsets was the local people.
Yeah.
But also you seemed to mix in very well with the others. And the Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as you've got replacements in Europe, I suppose they came...
They came many everywhere,
yeah. Yeah. Did that spoil the atmosphere a bit?
No, I don't think, because those that I knew did come from Dorset, though. Like that Phillips Blood chap, he was in Dorset.
So you tended just to stick together a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Any other stories that come to mind?
No, I can't think of anything else.
Right. Well, it's been a fascinating tale. So thank you very much for that. And I'll just say, Norman Dorr, end of reel 5.